By the time they called me, a whole week had passed since the second body had been discovered. This was a setback, as much of the evidence would have disappeared by now, and I'd have to work with what little evidence the local police, unaccustomed to these types of crimes, would have been able to collect. Luckily, I had been allocated a competent enough CSI unit, and as we flew from Washington to Kansas City International Airport, we imagined, quite rightly as it turned out, that the crime scene will have been spoiled by dozens of well-meaning but clumsy deputies. Liz, who I already knew professionally from the only case that I'd worked on up till then, handed me a folder containing photos. The cyanotic bodies of two naked girls, abandoned in a lagoon, like the unimportant remnants of a quiet morning picnic. I was staring into the open eyes of one of the young girls, who could not have been more than 20 years old, when I was struck by her plea, "You must find who did this to me." Horrified, I turned the photos over and looked out the window of the small Gulfstream 3. We were already over the state of Illinois. There were only a few clouds in the sky, and I remember seeing clearly, or maybe I imagined it, the city of Springfield with its famous lake, the majestic and peaceful feeling it gave me, contrasted with the murky storm that I knew lingered over my immediate future. I closed my eyes, and I saw my father, casually throwing a new baseball for me to catch. I wanted to drown in this idyllic image and live immersed in it forever. Back to reality. I had a new challenge to face, and there was a lot at stake. My first case had been closed with a thunderous triumph. I'd been able to profile a serial murderer that was tormenting the citizens of the decadent city of Detroit for months. Initially, the detectives on the different cases had not been able to make the links between them, and the records set among hundreds of swollen archives in the city with the highest crime rate in the United States. And it was here that my new boss, Peter Wharton, director of the Unit of Analysis of Conduct from the FBI headquarters in Quantico, had sent me. He trusted me mainly for two reasons. My impeccable academic record, including being top of my class in psychology at Stanford University, and my remarkable deductive ability, tested dozens of times by himself personally during my training using detailed cases based on real events. I didn't let him down. After several weeks of hard work, I not only managed to create a criminal profile with a 92% match, but also to define his operating areas and pinpoint where he most likely lived. In 3 months, we'd managed to catch a monster that had swept away no less than 21 innocent souls. On my return to Washington, not only many of my colleagues welcomed me as a hero, but Peter also started to see me as confirmation of the new generation of special deputies emerging from Quantico. My success, undeniably, was due in large part to him, and therefore it also belonged to him. Only 6 months has passed since then. Half a year of resting on my laurels, enjoying the heaven earned, observing the action from the sidelines, extending my training, and evaluating cases, the solution to which I already knew beforehand in the majority of cases. A comfortable and easy life. But nothing is forever. The comfortable jet was taking me over 600 miles per hour and at more than 40,000 feet in altitude, closer to an uncertain fate that would mark my future. A new success would open the doors to the fastest elevators in the FBI. A failure would cause doubts in my abilities, and until another new challenge, nobody would be certain whether I, Ethan Bush, was a genius who had a forgivable lapse, or whether I was a complete waste of space who got lucky once.